Good afternoon. We are back for hour number two of the Now program. Scott Spears along with you for the ride on this first day of spring, Wednesday, March the 21st, 2018, 13 minutes past the hour. We want to thank Tom Janod and ESPN, of which Tom works for now, for coming on in hour number one. For those of you who don't know, the big Mr. Rogers movie is coming out with Tom Hanks next year, I believe. And it's about Fred Rogers' relationship with a writer who was working for Esquire at the time, and that was Tom Janod, and you just heard him in hour number one. That was a lot of fun, and we thank Tom and ESPN for allowing that to happen. Now, a little bit of housekeeping here before we get to our very special guest. Tomorrow, this show will emanate from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Heinz History Museum, from 12:15 to 5 p.m., Terry Tackett, Adam Lepp, and myself will be there 12 to 5. David Newell, Mr. Rogers' favorite postman, Mr. McFeely, will be with us, as will, let me get the name here right. A lot of papers in front of me today. Walt Tsang, who took the picture that will be in representation of the stamp. From the USPS, which will come out Friday in regard to Mr. Rogers. So Walt Tsang, David Newell, with us tomorrow at the Heinz History Museum, 12:10 to 5 p.m. And then on Friday morning, thanks to the USPS, we will be at WQED, where they taped Mr. Rogers for all those years for the big Mr. Rogers stamp unveiling. And we received word this morning that they will have a capacity crowd, and it's a very popular, if not the most popular, stamp being unveiled this year so far. So that is great. That's what we'll be doing. And this hour, to help round all that out, we're pleased to be joined by a first-time visitor to this program. He is the stamp, a person in charge of stamp development with the United States Post Office, Bill Gicker. Bill, how are you?
Great. How are you?
Doing very well. Big couple days here for the post office.
Yes, it's the lead up to a first day of issue for a stamp tends to be, you know, very busy and full of moving parts, but it's all good.
I want to get this fact out there because I think this is interesting. The post office gets about 30,000 suggestions for stamp ideas each year, but only 25 to 30 topics make the cut. How does that process happen, Bill?
Sure. So we receive a lot of correspondence from the public. I have a staff that reviews and that comes in. We bump it up against our published criteria, which can be found on USPS.com. Advisory committee once a quarter. So it doesn't really matter who sends it in. It goes before them just as a topic, not associated with who sent it in, and the committee weighs the merits of a particular subject and decides whether or not they would recommend it as a stamp.
How did Mr. Rogers come to be?
Well, of course, you know, topics like Mr. Rogers are very well known anyway, but usually everything that comes in through the public. And when this suggestion came in, it was reviewed, and the committee decided that Mr. Rogers definitely would be a worthy candidate for issuance on a stamp.
Now, Walt Tsang took the picture that will become this stamp. How has that all worked out?
Well, the USPS has contract art directors that work for us and help us with turning the subject matter into a stamp. And what we, the art director for this one, her name is Derry Noyes, and she started searching for images that became the iconic, you know, that would represent the iconic image of Fred Rogers. So, of course, when she found this photograph, he's wearing his signature cardigan, and he has a great smile, and he has the puppet of King Friday. So it just seemed like a natural.
Now, what goes, for those who won't be there, and we'll try to bring it to them the best we can, what will happen on Friday?
On Friday, there will be a rather formal ceremony where there will be a color guard, and they will sing the national anthem. And then there will be various people there to speak about Mr. Rogers or Fred Rogers, and people who have known him, but also our Postmaster General will be there, and she will be the dedicating official. They will, beyond the speeches, there will be an unveiling moment where they will pull a drape and reveal an enlargement of the stamp.
Now, for people here in Ohio, when would we be able to buy the stamp, and how could we get the stamp?
The stamp will be available on Friday. It'll be available from the time post offices open on Friday. So either at your local post offices or by calling, we have a 1-800-STAMP-24 number. And we also have USPS.com where you can order stamps.
And for those who don't know, the current cost of a stamp is how much?
It is 50 cents.
50 cents. In my lifetime, and I think this is before you came to this position, but the first time I remember something like this happening was the Elvis stamp.
Elvis came out in 1994, I believe, and that was a little bit before my time.
What was that the kick? Because I don't remember a whole lot of people being profiled on stamps before that.
He was probably one of the biggest figures of a pop culture nature that would have been featured on a stamp. When stamps first started, of course, it was the founding fathers, so George Washington, Ben Franklin. And over time, subject matter started to shift and change. And then Elvis was really a turning point as far as incorporating pop culture or cultural icons onto stamps.
Tell us a little bit about your background. How did you come to this position?
Well, I started in the Postal Service. My degree is in English literature, but I came into the Postal Service in 1998. I was working on their USA Philatelic catalog, which is their stamp collecting catalog, and I managed that for about 13 years. And then I was the creative director of stamps after that, and eventually the manager of stamp development.
Now, what have been some of your favorite projects?
Well, Star Wars is a favorite topic of mine, so when we got to do a Star Wars stamp, of course, that was a favorite of mine. I would also say, you know, Walt Disney, working with the Walt Disney Studios on stamps has definitely had a special place for me because the people have been so wonderful to work with, and we've really enjoyed our working together. So they're probably two of my favorites.
What is a typical day like in your position?
Well, on average, we're working on about 120 to 150 projects, meaning stamp projects, at any given time. So my job is keeping all of those moving pieces moving and making sure that everyone has the information they need to be able to do their jobs and so that we'll have a stamp program on time.
Now, stamps all cost the same when you buy a basic stamp. Is there a call for a particular kind of stamp over another type of stamp?
Well, the most common is first class, first ounce. So that's your basic letter rate stamp, and that's what's currently 50 cents. All stamps that are of that value at this point are called forever stamps. They have the word forever rather than a denomination, or as their denomination, I should really say. And what that means is whatever you buy it for, it will always be good for first class, first ounce, so a letter rate, and the value will never change.
When you are dealing with criteria, for who goes on a stamp or what goes on a stamp, what are some things that have to meet up?
Well, of course, you know, as the United States Postal Service and the U.S. Stamp Program, the subject matter should really be significant to the United States. It should be national in appeal rather than local. We do have a criteria that says that people must be deceased at least 3 years to be considered for being on a stamp. They're probably the main ones, but there are, I believe, 12 right now, and they can be found at USPS.com.
Do stamps ever go out of circulation?
They do. So Mr. Rogers is part of one of our annual stamps for 2018. So we print, we have a one-time print run, and that print run we estimate would last about a year. So we anticipate that Mr. Rogers will be available for purchase for about a year, sometimes a little more, sometimes a little less, just depending. And then once quantities are depleted, it will go off sale.
How many stamps have been produced for Friday's opening?
I do not have that number, but like I said, it'll be enough to last for about a year.
Now, are these shipped out once? Can post offices request more, or would you have to go to the phone number if the post office is run out? How does that work?
Post offices, when they run out of quantities, can certainly order more, and individuals can place orders for their own either via phone or online.
Has there ever been a stamp that started in development but did not make it to a stamp?
There have been stamps. There have been subjects that either proved too difficult or too complicated to work as a stamp, because really a stamp is a very small item, and you have to be able to tell a lot of information in that very small space, and something that people will understand by just glancing at it, because often the stamp would arrive on a letter and you want people to understand what you're trying to convey. Otherwise, if the rights of usage cannot be cleared, then that's another reason why a stamp may not make it through to completion.
We hear that Friday there will be a capacity crowd there. Is it exciting to have a stamp with a lot of attention on it like this?
It is, yes. It's very exciting. You know, one of our biggest challenges is making sure that everyone's aware of the variety of stamps. You know, everyone knows Postal Service produces stamps, but most people tend to think of a flag or something like that, when really the Postal Service does a very wide variety on a yearly basis of subjects that could be of interest to many, many people. So, you know, getting exposure is very good for us, because that's one of our biggest challenges.
You know, I always see after an event like this, there are cardboard cutouts, there are plates if the stamp is popular. Does the post office have anything to do? Do they have to give permission to those things?
They do. There are two types of products, you know, two general categories. There are what we call philatelic products, which we produce ourselves, and they are very much a collectible product. So we have commemorative pages, we have keepsakes, and we do a yearbook each year. But other things like you're referencing, or mugs or posters, that would be done through an outside agency, through a licensing opportunity. And we would only do that if we have permission to work, you know, through the estate holder, so Mr. Rogers' estate.
That being said, how was the relationship with them? Were they excited about this? Were they ready to do this?
Yes, they were very excited. It was just a purely positive experience. You know, it's always wonderful when you have someone like Mrs. Rogers, who is thankfully still with us, and to see the excitement, to recognize that her husband's being honored on a U.S. postage stamp.
Have you had a chance to speak with Mrs. Rogers?
I have not worked with her directly, no.
It's kind of interesting because I would say next to Fred Rogers, the most popular person in that series was a postman, Mr. McFeely.
Yes.
So it's kind of an interesting,
That's right.
Interesting tie-in.
It is, yes.
And he's still with us.
He is. And as far as I understand, he will be there on Friday. That's a very good thing.
I believe he will. How does the post office look on characters who portray the post office in popular culture?
Often, especially now, film companies or production companies will actually work with the Postal Service to make sure that the carriers are people that reflect the Postal Service are represented fairly and accurately. So it is something that actively happens. If a production company wants to film in a post office or use a carrier or a box or a vehicle, they will work with us to make sure everything is done properly.
What is the biggest obstacle today for the post office?
Well, of course, declining mail volume is a big one for us. That's what the Postal Service receives, no taxpayer dollars. We are self-funded primarily through the sale of our service, which is moving the mail. And as mail volume drops, then the money that we bring in to run the service also drops. So that's really one of the largest challenges. But we still feel that there's definitely a place for mail, and for certain purposes, we feel that when you're thanking someone for a kind deed or something that positive that someone has done for you, doing it in the handwritten form is always better than an email.
On Friday, the Postmaster General will be in Pittsburgh. Can you give us a little background on the Postmaster General?
Sure. The Postmaster General is the first female Postmaster General the Postal Service has ever had. She has a long postal career, and she is a Pennsylvania native. So for her, this hits very close to home, and I think she is very excited.
Now, she's a native of Pennsylvania. You're a native of Pennsylvania. This is
That's
happening
right.
in Pennsylvania. This is all kind of lining up here.
Well, happy circumstance.
Happy, you know, being a Pennsylvanian, for people out there listening, what's the best part of Pennsylvania for you?
Well, I grew up in Chester County, Pennsylvania, so I grew up in very much the rolling hills of Chester County, and it's just a beautiful place. It was a beautiful place to grow up.
If you wanted to get a catalog or a yearbook, where can those be purchased?
Catalogs are free, and they come out 4 times a year, but through UCOM/shop, you can order a yearbook or request a catalog. Also, through the 1-800-STAMP-24 number, that's also a way that you can get a free catalog or to order any of our stamps or yearbooks or any of our other products.
Is there a stamp coming up after this that you are particularly excited about?
Oh, let's see. There's so many. There's one coming up later this year that has a very interesting story. It's the Peace Rose, and it's a very popular rose, and it actually was cultivated in France, and it was sort of taken undercover out of France during World War II, when France was being invaded, and it thrived in this country, and the family who originated it is still very involved, and it'll be a very interesting event involving family on this from the U.S. and from France.
Are there any more people on the agenda this year who've been with us?
That is a good question. You know, honestly, I have to admit, I work usually 2 to 3 years in advance, so I lose track of what's happening in my current year. But let me think. Oh, it has been announced that later this summer, John Lennon will be appearing on a stamp.
Oh, now was there any controversy with that about him not being born in the United States?
No, you know, really, both John Lennon and the Beatles had such a big influence on the United States that they impacted our culture, and that can't be denied. Also, though he was unfortunately killed, he was actively becoming a U.S. citizen. So, it all tells the story, a greater story of the United States, I think.
What is the submission process. Do you know who submitted the idea of Mr. Rogers?
I do not, and it probably wasn't just one. We actually don't track who submitted, because in our process, the committee reviews topics from, you know, whether it's sent in by a state senator or by, you know, my uncle. It shouldn't make any difference. Could be a 7-year-old child, or it could be someone who's risen through ranks. But when it comes to the committee, they make their decisions in a very democratic manner, and they review everything purely on merits, not by who submitted.
Is there a best-selling stamp of all time?
Well, you know, there are a lot of opinions on that. Certainly Elvis was thought to be that, and Disney has been very popular. But in reality, probably the biggest selling stamp every year is always the U.S. flag, and that remains popular and continues to this day.
Is there something that didn't go over big that it just, well, boy, I thought that would be better?
Yeah, it really depends on how we produce. So, you know, I could say that in some ways, stamp might not be as popular, but maybe we produced it in the wrong format. So nothing really comes to mind as really not working. But what we do know is the most popular stamps tend to be things like lighthouses and flowers and flags. They tend to be a little bit more, I don't want to say generic, but less specific than actual people on stamps.
It's a fun event, and the ceremony sounds like fun, and I'm being told that actually the phone was cutting out, so I want you to do this before we let you go, Bill. Again, what is the process of getting a stamp to production?
So we first get, as we've discussed, topics from the public. It goes through the committee, the Citizen Stamp Advisory Committee. Once it goes through the committee, it is assigned to an art director to start the design process, and we also start the rights and permissions clearance process. And then once the stamp is designed and all parties are happy, including the estate and the Postal Service, then once it's in a program year, it gets slated for an appropriate time. We work with our partners to decide when a best time would be to issue a stamp in a particular year, and then we set it up for issuance.
I know what I was going to ask you before I let you go. Walt Tseng, who'll be with us tomorrow, who took the picture that became the stamp. Now, does he he still have the rights to that picture? How does that work?
Well, it depends. Now, I can't speak to this one in particular, but sometimes the rights are held by the photographers, and sometimes they're held by a company if the photographer was employed for that company. So it really just depends. But we claim no ownership over the underlying image that's used on the stamp, but we claim copyright when the stamp is in its entirety. So meaning with the perforations around it in the border and with the typography that makes it a stamp, then it's the Postal Service. But we certainly respect the underlying rights, the photographer, the estates, and work very collaboratively with our partners.
It's going to be interesting, fascinating, and before we part ways, tell people exactly what the stamp looks like.
Well, the stamp is a very nice portrait of Fred Rogers. He's wearing a red sweater on a blue background. He has a very warm and endearing smile, and he's holding King Friday, which is the puppet that he would interact with in his land of make-believe.
It's going to be a fun day Friday. Bill Gicker in stamp development for the United States Post Office. Thanks so much, Bill, for giving us some time in what is a very fun and enjoyable week for everybody here in the Midwest and hopefully all over the United States.
Thank you. I hope everyone enjoys the stamps.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bill Gicker. There you go. Man in charge of stamp development for the United States Post Office. If you have any questions, give us a call, 740-383-9944. I think we're going to hear from Adam Lepp here, who I believe is already in Pittsburgh getting ready for the big two-day broadcast over the next 2 days. Two-day broadcast over 2 days. Who would have thunk it? 740-383-9944. But don't forget, tomorrow, 12:15 to be listening to this station, because we're going to be broadcasting live from the Heinz History Museum. Terry, Adam, and myself broadcasting live. We will have David Newell, Mr. McFeely, with us, and we will also have Walt Tseng, the man who took the picture that has become the stamp. And then on Friday, we will be on 11 to 1 p.m. From WQED's studios in Pittsburgh, where Mr. Rogers was filmed from the stamp dedication. Postmaster General will be there, Mrs. Rogers, David Newell, Joe Negri, the whole kit and caboodle. It's going to be a lot of fun. Hope you tune in here to WWGH Radio over the next 2 days for all the festivities that will come about. You're not going to want to miss this. Tell your friends. And as we were informed earlier on, that the United States Postal Service has said, called this morning and said that they are at capacity crowd size. So there's going to be a capacity crowd on Friday for the stamp unveiling at WQED. And so far, it's the most popular stamp this year. How interesting is that? Oh, and I want to give this information. If you're wondering how you submit an idea for a stamp, you mail it in writing to Citizens Stamp Advisory Committee, 475 L. I'm going to spell this for you. L-E-N-F-A-N-T, Plaza, Southwest, Room 3300, Washington, D.C. Citizens Stamp Advisory Committee, 475 L-E-N-F-A-N-T, Plaza, Southwest, Room 3300, Washington, D.C. Now, that is how you get the stamp out. Zip code 20260. 20260. That's how you get an idea out to the post office for a stamp you'd like to see. So that's how you do it. You have to do it in writing. I don't think there's a website at this point. But all this interest is fun as we head into Friday for the Mr. Rogers stamp unveiling. Because I'd say Mr. Rogers is an American folk hero, and I'm curious to know if it's being done this week, because yesterday, March the 20th, was Fred Rogers' 90th birthday. So that could be where this is all coming from, I would imagine. Now, I think this might be our guest today. Let's see here. As we head over to the phones, I believe we're getting to this late because we've had news here, but we're always glad to welcome this person to our microphones. He is the father of Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, and everybody of that nature. We're always glad when he comes to our microphones. The legendary Barry Farber. Barry, how are you?
Sean, I am fine. This is absolutely fortuitous. I thought you forgot me.
No.
I thought I'd make one more attempt to connect, and I'm so glad I did.
We did, and we've got 20 minutes to hash over the problems of the world, so it's a good place to be.
Okay, I'm ready.
All right. Barry, here we are, Sunday night. Stormy Daniels is going to go on 60 Minutes. We do know that she was paid $130,000 for whatever reason. We do know that President Trump has filed a lawsuit to try to stop her. We do know that she is going to speak to 60 Minutes. Her attorneys say that she has been physically threatened. What does this woman know that nobody else knows?
Well, I don't know, but I think what we're going to learn, what I'm going to learn, you're going to learn, and what Stormy herself is going to learn, is that it used to be instant execution, firing squad type stuff, justice. You got caught in something like that, you were through politically and just about every other way. Bill Clinton paved a very brave path, showed us that it's not necessarily, the French have a wonderful cliche in a French idiom. So, ce n'est pas la fin de haricot means it's not the end of string beans. Today, after that Stormy thing erupted, Trump's ratings went up a little bit. Now, it may or may not have been connected. It may or may not be material, but they didn't tank. They didn't go down. Trump was a plain citizen at the time, and I think he himself is going to be surprised by the power to forgive that the American public, at least those of us who admire Trump, are going to flick this aside like a mosquito.
Well,
if I were a Democrat, I wouldn't build a church on this destroying Operation Trump.
Well, here's what I don't quite understand, Barry, about this whole situation is, yes, Bill Clinton did have extramarital affairs, and yes, he was impeached for it, and yes, he did suffer from it, but by the time he left office, he left very popular with high approval ratings. So it didn't hurt him in the approval department. I don't think it'll hurt Trump in the approval department, because I think we've already understood that it probably did happen. But what I don't understand is why she was paid hush money, why she was physically threatened. What does she? We already know pretty much that she had the affair. Why is she talking to 60 Minutes? I don't get what we're going to learn. I don't understand why President Trump... President Trump was accused by 13 women during the election of sexual harassment. I don't think any of them got hush money. Why this one? What does she know?
Well, I think you've touched on the most absolutely idiotic in every respect. The cover-up was about 1,000 times worse than the deed itself. Do you realize that the attorney said he didn't want to bother President Trump? He went into his own pocket and pulled out the $130,000 to give to Stormy for hush money. Do you believe that? That even fails a stand-up comedy. The only thing as stupid we owe to the late Adolf Hitler, when he sent saboteurs to the United States and they landed by submarine off the coast of Long Island, New York, and they were spotted. They were spotted by a Coast Guard official walking up and down that way, and the Nazis offered him $300 if he wouldn't talk about they're being caught burying weapons and maps and compasses and everything in the sand. Well, the guy took the money, turned it over to the government, reported the whole thing. The Nazis were caught, and in wartime, you can expect to be executed, which all the Nazis except one who turned evidence were. I cannot fathom the stupidity of this. I'm not calling Trump a Nazi. I'm the last one to do that. I am an unashamed Trump admirer, but I am not an admirer of this deed. It absolutely reeks with stupidity. It drips stupidity.
Well, and again, Barry, this is, again, what I don't understand. We knew all that before. We knew the lawyer paid hush money. We knew this woman was a prostitute. We knew that President Trump probably had a relationship with her. We knew all that. And yet, after we know all that, President Trump is suing her now. What doesn't he want her to say? That's what I don't understand. We know all the dirty stuff. We know there was hush money. We know that she's a prostitute. We know they probably had a relationship. Why is he trying to sue her now? What does she know?
The only theory I've got, my cousin Gurney says, never believe a fact unless it's supported by a theory. The only theory I have is that this was not plain old vanilla sex, that there was a little aberrational game playing at work here, which will not be as easy for the American public to swallow as a routine sexual affair.
It's very interesting. And I'm going to move off this. People will watch it on Sunday and get what they get out of it. But Vladimir Putin recently won re-election, and President Trump called him and congratulated him. And John McCain, Senator McCain, did not like that. And this is what he sent out in a statement. This is Senator McCain. An American president does not lead the free world by congratulating dictators on winning sham elections. And by doing so with Vladimir Putin, President Trump insulted every Russian citizen who was denied the right to vote in a free and fair election to determine their country's future, including the countless Russian patriots who have risked so much to protest and resist Putin's regime. What do you make of that? Why did President Trump...
I'm on McCain's side there, but I don't think it rises very high. not a major issue, but I think I did most of my work back in the days of the Cold War. I accused Putin of trying to rekindle the Cold War as a path back to Russian glory, even if it's Soviet-tinged Russian glory. No, absolutely right. Democracy is a holy land. It's a holy land. Save it, please, for America, for Canada, for the United Kingdom, for Norway, Sweden, Denmark, Holland, Belgium, all of Western Europe, thank God. That's what freedom is for. That's what congratulations are for. Putin is an unsavory thug. I don't want to go to war with Russia. I want normal relations, but I don't have to congratulate him. I think this is McCain's finest statement. It's exactly what it was, a sham election.
Well, Barry, as a Trump admirer, which you say you are, what I can't understand is we now have 13 indictments of Russians. We have three Russian companies indicted by Mueller for handling or mishandling the election last time, interfering, let's put it that way, on Donald Trump's behalf. Not collusion, but they wanted him to be president. They did not want Hillary Clinton to be president. President Trump knows this. There have been sanctions that have been wanted to be put in place. President Trump has put some of those in place. Knowing all that's all happened in the last 40 days, why would he even call him after this election?
I'm obviously not privy to President Trump's deepest thoughts. I think that he sees at the end of the road a plus, a political plus. What is so bad about having good relations with the planet Earth's other superpower? None others need apply. America, Russia, China has its nose under the tent, but they have so many problems. You know, the Hungarian Revolution was given to freedom lovers around the world because of one incidence of public outcry. The public got together and demonstrated. They don't like that in communist regimes. One instance of the public rising up caused the Hungarian Revolution. 35,000 Hungarian freedom fighters lost. Now, here we have China. Do you know how many public uprisings there are in China? An average, Scott, of 200 every day. So I wouldn't build a church on foundations as shaky as China. But let's include China. That's not a democracy. They don't even, as a matter of fact, they pretend to be more of a dictatorship than they really are. Strange case. The only reason that they are living as well as they are is they gave up communism. They abandoned it in everything except rhetoric. They're still the People's Republic of China, but they're completely capitalistic in their economy and in their way of life. I say saved, congratulations for the real good guys who win real elections, not for Vladimir Putin and his, thank you, Mr. McCain, sham elections.
And this is an interesting point, Barry, because you're exactly right. China has a dictator, and we are friendly with China. But I think the big difference is between that and Putin is Putin is having his political opponents jailed and killed. He has a very big disdain for America. China's a dictatorship, but that we don't seem to have this disdain with them. Putin, right. 3 weeks ago, showed a missile blowing up Florida. Now, what I can't understand is when North Korea speaks up, when the United Kingdom says something, when Australia, President Trump is the first one to be on top of them, calling them names, saying, watch out, called Kim Jong-un Rocket Man. Putin shows a missile blowing up Florida, and he never said a negative word about Putin to this day. He congratulates him.
Yeah, a lot of us wonder about that. But wonder has its boundary lines. So what? The people who find crumbs in their paycheck, some of those crumbs are $1,000 and more, they're going to forgive stuff like that. I'm going to forgive stuff like that. And even more than an admirer of President Trump, I'm an admirer of the countries I named, beginning with America, the really, really genuine democracies. I don't think that the Kansas City milkman is going to let that swing. He's not going to look across the kitchen table and tell his wife, I don't like the fact that Trump congratulated Putin. I wish America, I'm that way. I wish more Americans were that way. I wish more Americans valued real freedom and rejected sham imitations of freedom. But with what, working with what we've got, not the mentality we aspire to, but the mentality we happen to have, I don't think we're doing too badly.
You know,
and I don't think Trump is going to suffer.
You know, Barry, this is what I think is a common disconnect between the media and people. You're right. I don't think people are sitting over their dinner table saying, why did Trump congratulate Putin, or why hasn't he showed his tax returns, or why is Stormy Daniels being paid hush money, why is he suing her? I don't think it hurts his popularity. I don't think it does at all. I don't think Monica Lewinsky hurt Bill Clinton's popularity. I think
You're right.
That's okay. But what I'm saying is, as a journalist, as a person in the media, there are just answers that are serious in the world's landscape. If you show a map to people, most people couldn't tell you where Vietnam was, but it is important to know. And I wonder why our president, in 14 months, and then add on 2 years of campaigning, has never spoken a negative word about Vladimir Putin, why he held off on sanctioning him, why he congratulates him after the sanctions, and why this hush money was paid. I don't think it's a popularity thing, but I think it's very deep, important questions, and I think John McCain knows that.
Yeah, and don't forget, Scott, add to that roll call that you accurately recited just now, the fact that they tried to interfere in our elections. I mean, politically speaking, that demands 30 days in the electric chair.
Yes, and I keep asking, I'm not saying Donald Trump knew about it. I don't There's no proof that says he did. But why did they favor him over Hillary? Why did Vladimir Putin have a favorite?
Scott, I can't accept that. People smarter than I accept that and believe that. That puzzles me. But I cannot imagine Putin looking across Europe and the Atlantic Ocean at America and preferring to Hillary. Trump has a lot of Putin-type isotopes in his bloodstream. He's not going to roll over. He's going to play it tough. Putin wants to be a tough thug. Trump is going to be a tough democracy advocate. And everybody knows that poor Hillary would be no match for Putin. He could inhale sharply and liquefy her whole position. I cannot believe that they preferred Hillary, Trump to Hillary.
Well, but
I don't understand it.
In your answer, I think, is the question. The answer is what you just said. Trump is a street fighter. In his own words, when somebody punches me, I punch back harder.
Right.
Putin has punched America and punched him. He's congratulating him. Why? What is it about Putin that he won't punch back? What is it? Why did they want him? And if Putin could have cast a ballot, clearly he would have cast it for President Trump. If it's not the man, what is it? Is it blackmail? If that is, then we got a serious problem.
Well, it depends what the blackmail is all about. General Flynn is having a very miserable time in his life right now because he didn't really understand the way what he pled guilty to. You've heard of the perjury trap. You haven't necessarily done the wrong thing, but if you say the wrong thing, if you are guilty of a routine, honest, earnest inaccuracy, they'll get you for perjury. I have learned, believe me, I've learned more in the past 2 years than a lot of people learn in 4 years of law school, and I wasn't even trying. The perjury trap. I never used to believe any of that. I used to think that was all sore-headedness. I figured if they got you on perjury, it means you're a liar. I've turned around 180 degrees. I always thought if you said, I'm not guilty, why am I pleading guilty? Because I can't put my family through this, and I can't have my, I can't be bankrupted by the legal bills. I used to think that was such a sick, infuriating cop-out. Come on now. Man, I turned around 100%. That is thoroughly logical, and I now believe a good portion of those who use that as their exculpatory explanation, as their defense.
I'm with you on this, Barry. I will wait till the end of the Mueller investigation to see what they turn up. But my questions right now, aside from Mueller, are why did he congratulate Putin, and why is he suing this woman? And we're going to know the answer to that on Sunday night, without question. They put this story off 2 weeks so they could vet it, so they could not be sued. So 60 Minutes Sunday night, I think we'll have Super Bowl ratings. It's Stormy Daniels. It may be a big nothing, but you don't know. I just can't imagine you sue somebody because the three things we already know. We know she's a prostitute, we know he had an affair with her, and we know somebody gave her hush money. So why sue her after we know all that? What more does she have to say?
Well, a lot of people may know that there's a place called Albania, but they don't know where it is. Maybe they are unsatisfied with the traction that such knowledge has gained. Maybe they think it deserves more traction, and they haven't gotten enough. And if they don't get more, the Schumer and Pelosi crowd are going to have another miserable night come election time.
Well, here's what I worry about, because the two rumors out there, Barry, aside from what she might have said, are she has pictures, which would be awful for the country, and also that I think the pictures are probably the bigger worry, but also that she knows some proclivities about this man and how long this relationship went on. And it just, I think both of those things, oh, that she was physically threatened. That's left me there for a second.
If she Scott, have you noticed they say physically threatened, but then that's the end of the joyride. They never say by whom.
That's what I hope there isn't no by whom on Sunday, because if we find that out, there's going to be some ugly days ahead.
You are a treasure, my friend.
Hey, Barry.
Thank you very much for including me in your loop.
You're one of my favorites, and you know what? If we can make it happen, because we had to cut this short, I hope we can do something next week, maybe even on Monday, after this comes out, because who knows what it will be? Who knows what will happen in the next 5 days?
As they say in our holy lands of talk radio, have your people call my people.
Barry, stay well. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Scott. I love it. Take care.
Barry Farber, one of the best. This is Scott Spears heading for the dugout. Until next time, I'll be in Pittsburgh.
Hearing loss. Hearing loss develops gradually, and treating it as soon as you recognize the warning signs can prevent it from getting worse. A free in-office hearing screening from Beltone can help determine your and how best to treat it. 740-389-566 to schedule your free hearing evaluation.
The WEH Radio prize policy is as